Hello and welcome to Independent Thinking, the weekly podcast from Chatham House. I'm Bronwyn Maddox, the director. This week, we are returning to Turkey to talk about one of the most important election results in the country's recent history. Last weekend, Turkey's Republican People's Party, CHP, the country's main opposition, decisively defeated President Erdogan's Justice and Development Party, that's the AKP, in local elections across the country and in the five largest cities. In Istanbul, CHP Mayor Ekrem İmamoğlu secured another term in office despite Erdogan's determination to retake the city where he served as mayor in the 1990s. And notably, the CHP also made inroads in some areas of traditional AKP support. So the results were pretty bruising for Erdogan, and they've resurrected opposition hopes of finally unseating him in 2028 after failing to do so only 10 months ago in the presidential election. We're going to talk about what drove Turkish voters to turn away from the AKP and whether Turkey's democracy is more resilient than many analysts thought when the results of that election came through. We'll talk about this and a lot more on today's podcast, including Turkey's significant role in Gaza and Ukraine. Well, joining me down the line is Professor Soli Özel, a senior lecturer at Istanbul Kadir Has University. Welcome.
Hello. Well, thanks for having me.
Very, very good to have you here. Joining us as well is Dr. Ercan Aslı Aksoy, the head of the Center for Applied Turkey Studies at the SWP think tank in Berlin. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me on the podcast.
Really great as well. And finally, back on the podcast this week is Galip Dalay, a senior consulting fellow with our Middle East and North Africa program. Welcome, Galip.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
Well, let's first discuss this historic election result. And Galip, I wonder if you could take us into this. Just tell us about what these elections were, that where they were held, and how it was different from the presidential campaign.
This is a local election, and against all odds, the opposition has gained a significant victory, winning the 10 largest cities in Turkey, including like Istanbul, Ankara, Izmir, and the first 10 largest cities in country. And in total, it won around 35 cities in Turkey versus the government's 26 cities. So in terms of the result, it's impressive result for the opposition victory. The opposition not only won all these cities, but it won with big margin. Just to give an example, in Ankara, the opposition candidate won the city by 30% lead over its rival. And in Istanbul, it's around 11.5% lead over its rival. The question is why this happened and why this did not happen last year, given that Turkey had its general election, presidential election last year, parliamentary and presidential election. Several factors are crucial here. One of them is severe economic downturn, the rampant inflation, the fast depreciating currency, and overall the cost of living crisis the country is experiencing probably is the single most important factor. But this is not the only factor. The candidate matters as well. The profile of the candidates matter as well, because the result of the yesterday, this weekend, tells us probably with a different candidate last year, the opposition could have won the presidential election as well, because the opposition's candidate last year lacked charisma, was seen relatively as a weak candidate compared to the municipal candidates that we're seeing now opposition have for major cities. And also importantly, the turnout rate in this election was lower than the previous elections, around 8 to 10%. And then perception is that most of these voters that did not show up at the ballot box were the traditional government or conservative voters that were dissatisfied with the government for different reasons. So this is some of the key factors that led to this.
Let me bring in the others on this. You've given us a whole list of reasons of why this very dramatic result came about. Soli, what is your view, particularly on this economic effect? Because I'm thinking back to last summer, and one of the things that happened, a bit to many people's surprise after the presidential election, was the finance minister saying, look, we're going to try and deal with inflation in a more conventional way, raise interest rates and so on, but try really to get to grips with these economic problems. How has that gone down with voters?
Well, prior to the general elections and the presidential election, Erdogan dispensed of a lot of resources that he could distribute to people whose votes he needed. In fact, with that largesse, the economy in an illusory fashion actually appeared to be doing better, growing. People were getting their incomes. Once Şimşek came and the dire straits the economy is in was better understood, and the resources were no longer there if Turkey wanted to continue receiving funds from abroad, and the much targeted billions of dollars really did not come from the Gulf countries, therefore you had to rely on the international markets, meaning Western markets primarily, then you had to really be very careful. I mean, it is not part of the legacy of Erdogan not to actually give a big hike to pensioners' wages, for instance. And he did not. He resisted it. He probably couldn't do otherwise. So a lot of people think that the economy is the main reason. I mean, I'm not going to deny that the economy was an important reason. But I think there was also several other more positive factors. One, what the CHP ultimately had a leadership change, however bungled it may have appeared to us. And its leader is 49 years of age, and its standard bearer, that is the mayor of Istanbul, is 52 years of age. This is now a new generation coming to head a party which is full of dead wood, okay? And it's true that, again, with all the mistakes they may have made, they did exude a lot of energy. And particularly on the persons of the mayors of Ankara and Istanbul, you also had an extraordinarily strong record of managing major cities. Because one thing that we did not have for 21 years really was, there was never a candidate facing Erdogan in whom the broader public could actually put its trust, because you didn't think they could actually manage the country. Now you had at least two contenders, mayors, who have actually done, in spite of all the obstructionism on the part of the government, really very credible jobs, okay? They have set up a lot of things and they have helped the constituencies of AKP. Plus, they also proved that a CHP rule in any major city or in the country is not a threat to conservative lifestyles. One. Second, I think Erdogan has overdone it, and I'm afraid that he will continue to overdo it. What a younger colleague of ours, Şebnem Gümüşçü, called stealth Islamization. That is not, to the best of my understanding, that is not what the country is aspiring to. So once a certain percentage of AKP voters didn't go to the poll, that desire to actually break free from that stealth Islamization, this empowerment of brotherhoods, that continuing intrusion into people's private lives and reducing women's roles to the kitchen and to the children, I think there was in this particular election, and because, as Galip said, this was a local election, there was also a revolt against that kind of social and cultural pressure and oppression.
Really interesting there. No, you're taking us well beyond the economy. I should say that Şimşek, who you mentioned, is the new finance minister who came in, but taking us right into these cultural battles. Aslı, is this your view of it, that this is really quite a broad statement about people's rejection of some of the things the government was doing?
I mean, I agree with Soli that it didn't really pay off what the AKP has been doing in the last 20 years. But on the other hand, we have also the phenomena of the New Welfare Party, who has won more than 6% of the votes, which is an ultra-Islamist and / nationalist party. I mean, comparatively to AKP or CHP, for that matter, is smaller, but it's a new phenomenon within the Turkish politics. But I think the most important issue was really the economic crisis, because if you look at the numbers, more than two-thirds of people in Turkey are really struggling to pay for food and cover their rent. And it's really feeling a surge in mental illness, debt, and so on and so forth. So I was in Ankara during the elections, and I see people are really struggling dealing their daily lives. The economic purchase power has decreased. Not only the pensioners, but workers have also troubles. So I think that was the biggest reason or the most important reason behind the election results. But there are also, the lifestyles issue probably played a role. And CHP has, as Soli also mentioned, managed to speak to the voters of the AKP that they are not a threat for their lifestyle or Weltanschauung.
This question of the economy, I just want to stay on it for a second. I remember Minister Simsek saying to Chatham House, look, I took this job on the condition that I was allowed to pursue conventional ways of trying to beat inflation because that's what Turkey really needs. And Erdogan's previous idea of lowering interest rates to combat inflation had not worked. It had the opposite effect. Are these kind of arguments too technical for voters to get into? They're just concerned with the prices of the things they're buying. Or do you think the government is regretting having been persuaded to adopt more conventional economic tactics?
But the thing is, as I suggested in my initial statement, I don't think the government had a choice. I mean, if he had money to distribute, he would have distributed the money, because I'm sure their polls told them that they were losing really big time in major cities. I mean, the fact that there is one city, I can't remember now, I think it's Kırıkkale, where the CHP never in 100 years of Republican history has won the mayoralty. So yes, the background is the economic background, but I also think that once the grip is loosened, all the other complaints also come about. I mean, there is something about a sense of society, what it aspires to, that when it's relieved somewhat, will actually express itself. And to belittle that dimension of the elections, I think would be reading it wrongly. And I really think that the AKP may actually read it wrongly.
No, I think what Stoli is saying is exactly accurate. So the different components are unhappy with different parts of the government's policy. Obviously, the economy is the overarching framework that is shared grievance of everyone. But for people in the major cities, the perception that the government is meddling in their private life is also a factor. And you see the societal trend that has been ongoing for sometimes, not new, that actually it is against the government, the governing coalition, and it is more in favor of the opposition. Let's not forget, even last year, even the opposition lost the presidential election, but almost in all these major cities, in Istanbul, Ankara, Izmir, again, it had higher percentage of vote than Erdogan himself. But also in the East, you have, like, you know, in the West, there is this concern about the conservative side of the government's policy. In the Kurdish area, it's about the nationalist aspect of the government's policy. Like, one thing that you are seeing, a significant drop, a major drop of the recent years in the Kurdish votes for the governing coalition, which traditionally at its first decade in power used to get significant votes from the Kurds because of, for his different Kurdish opening. But now you see like a very significant drop in this one. Even some people that might come across as quite interesting here, but some people were unhappy with the government that it was not Islamist enough. So you have now an Islamist opposition party that is getting around 6.5% of the votes. And almost the whole narrative of this government, of this party, was that the government is not doing enough on Gaza, that the government is not doing enough on Gaza on the moral issue. So you have different components and different ones. And the final point, I think the Simsek that you mentioned deserves credit, despite all the pressure that he has been subject to have an election economy. He resisted it. And one thing that the President Erdogan emphasized after the defeat, that he will stick to the Simsek's economic plan. And I think that for this one, the Simsek probably deserves a credit.
I mean, another dimension of the electoral outcome is there are 81 provinces in Turkey, and 11 of them will be led by women mayors. So it's also, I mean, if you look at the, you know, the CHP female candidate and DEM party, pro-Kurdish DEM party's female candidate have won the race. So that also shows kind of people are, yeah, the AKP's, the stealth Islamization did not work out, and there is a need for younger and female power, maybe in the city construction, because until now there were only, as far as I know, only two mayors, female mayors. but now we have 11, and it's a quite an incredible success, actually. Because traditionally in Turkey, I mean, it was the highest number was almost lying around 1-2%, because I have written a piece about that. I was looking at the numbers. It's really the first time that women are also going to lead on the local level.
Do you share this view of a whole new generation of politicians coming through, particularly in the cities?
Yeah, that's for sure. I mean, if you look at the ages, I mean, like Soli also mentioned, I mean, Özgür Özel, the head of the CHP, is 49, and Ekrem İmamoğlu, 52. There's a new generation. And also with the female mayors, they are mostly between 40 and 50. They have a successful career in municipal politics. They come from different parts of the, you know, city administration. So they bring up, it's a new wave within the Turkish politics, I think.
So let's turn to this question. The three of you can help me bring this together. What does this mean for Erdogan and for the future of Turkish elections?
I think the several factor is crucial. One of them is, as Soli and Asta also mentioned, now the opposition is energized because only a few months ago, when we were discussing the opposition, we would say opposition is in disarray, because there was infighting within the opposition camp. Now the opposition is energized. Second, despite all its flaws, despite all its troubles, the resilience of Turkish democracy is stronger than many anticipated and many thought about it. So the democratic and societal resilience in Turkey is stronger. And I think that's one of the hopeful signs going to 2028. And the third one, in any political context, the profile, the actor, the candidate matters. Now the opposition trouble is, previously the opposition trouble was not having a credible alternative. Now the trouble is that they have many credible alternatives. So how they're going to manage these multiple actors, because you have the Istanbul mayor, which is quite charismatic. You have the Ankara mayor, which is again, like, you know, quite popular. You have even, I would say, after the election victory, the leader of the CHP probably also start to see himself as a potential candidate going forward as well. So now the opposition for the opposition is how they are going to manage the multiple candidates going forward in 2028.
Asla, what do you think it means for Erdogan?
I mean, he accepted the election results and he has said that it's going to be a turning point. And I think he will start with his own party because, you know, this morning or yesterday they released a video recording of Erdogan sitting and sipping of his Turkish coffee, and he was talking to the elected mayor of the city Düzce, and they were saying, it's okay, so we have won, you have to celebrate your success, but we have to think of the future. I mean, kind of thinking of the future of the party. And I think he will start with the, you know, like, make some changes in the AKP management. We can expect that. He has tried it before because he was also talking about metal fatigue, promised better politics in 2015 as well. So there is going to be a power struggle probably within the party. And that's the next step, I would say.
And Soli, your view?
First of all, I would put the stubbornness of the secular camp in Turkey near the very top of the agenda. You won't believe how many people were saying immediately after the May elections that even if they were threatened by the firing squad, they would not go and vote. At the end of the day, they did go and vote. And they did go and vote seriously, okay? And that suggests that a lot of people recognize that although these were local elections, what was at stake was much bigger than local elections. So that camp, by the way, in Istanbul, that camp has not given Erdogan a victory since 2017. Let me underline this. Istanbul is 20% of the country's population and 50% of its tax base, 32% of its economy and all that. And Istanbul is the picture of Turkey's future in all its glory and anarchy and modernity and traditionalism and all that. So that I think is something that ought to be taken into account. And the 11 women mayors and all the other mayors in smaller towns, that's also pretty important. So what about the future? Well, the thing is, look at the AKP cadres of 2002 and look at the AKP cadres of 2024, the difference in quality is remarkable. And unless Erdogan actually brings in either some of the old guards or really brighter people who are not yes people, I really don't see how he can revitalize his party. Secondly, the party is really very accustomed to corruption. Thirdly, Erdogan has lost a very massive pool of patronage networks because of the loss of the of those cities. Finally, we will not have to be contending with a much more vibrant, a much more dynamic CHP. There is a guy in one of the districts of Istanbul, Tuzla. The guy got elected mayor. He was 31 years old. He reminded me of the original AKP cadres who would not let you go until you promised them to vote for them. And he's there to provide services. He's there to actually to show solidarity with the aching people, with people who are going hungry and stuff. So it's a very different contest. It's going to be a very different contest. My hunch is AKP is a very tired ship. And I don't know if Erdogan really has himself the energy or the approach to actually bring it back to the kind of vitality it had, especially in the first, let's say, 10 years of its rule.
I think just adding one point, if I may, for a long time, the opposition basically played the game that Erdogan wanted them to play. So it turned everything into the culture war. And in this culture war, opposition was on the losing ground. Now, the opposition changed the contest from the culture war to contest over governance. Who can govern the country better? So it's no longer about a tally about the conservative side of the country, the secular side of the country, but who can manage the country better? I think this is a new game in town. We saw this in 2019 as well. And Erdogan thus far does not have an effective policy on this one. Secondly, the result of this election, the government, the Erdogan cannot revitalize its party by only changing some minor faces. I think that requires a major political change. So the decision has to be about the political direction, not just like minor changes of this face or that face.
Cosmetic changes.
Exactly. Yeah. So unless and until there's major political changes, reversing this will be quite tricky. It can reverse. Still, I think we should not underestimate it, because the major question at this stage is how the opposition is going to manage the victory and the government is going to manage the defeat. That's the crucial. So both of them can make blunders still.
Asla, I wonder if we could move on, and perhaps you could take us into our second topic a bit more briefly, which is how Turkey has positioned itself on Ukraine and Gaza. And as we were just touching on earlier, this does link in with domestic politics. Can you just explain for us how the Turkey has chosen to position itself?
I mean, these are two different topics, but Turkey, you know, like in Ukraine and the war in Ukraine, Turkey has positioned itself as a mediator between the both parties of the conflict.
Yep.
But, you know, Turkey is keeping its economic relations with Russia, does not join in the European sanctions, but at the same time supporting Ukraine. Turkey, I mean, Ankara has been always in favor of the territorial integrity of the country, didn't recognize of the Crimea neither. So, you know, with both countries, Turkey is a functioning, effective relations. And actually, Ankara is deepening its military cooperation with Ukraine. And the war has actually kind of diminished Russian domination within the Black Sea, because, you know, Russian Black Sea fleet Ukraine has disabled one third of Russian Black Sea fleet. So Turkey is trying kind of to balance the power in Black Sea. I wouldn't go that far that it will dominate, but surely embrace the opportunity to balance the power in the Black Sea. In Gaza, Turkey also thought of playing the role of mediation, but it was impossible because after 10 days of the 7th of October, Erdogan quite clearly accused the Israeli state and Hamas, defined the Hamas as freedom fighters, so it cannot play a mediator role. And it's actually Ankara never played the most important role in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. It was always Egypt. Therefore, we see that Turkey has reached its limits in its foreign policy in the Middle East and especially in the Gaza conflict. But it might play a role in the post-conflict, but I guess we will come to that.
We will, and we're not post-conflict yet by any means. Soli, what do you think this means for Turkey's influence and its relations with Israel in the future?
The relations with Israel are probably going to be problematic for some time to come, but I really don't see any country with which Israel will not have problematic relations either. I mean, they have just closed down the Al Jazeera office, I think, in Israel. And Qatar is supposed to be one of the interlocutors, right? One of the mediators.
One giving house room to some Hamas leaders at the moment, which is one of Israel's points. But the point you're making of this is fractured Israel's relationships on many sides, I think, is undeniably true.
Yeah. And if the Israelis, as I see it, manage to actually expand the war zone, then they will have bad relations with, even worse relations with all the other countries in the region. No, nobody in the region, I think, really wants a much more comprehensive war that would draw in Iran, at the very least, Hezbollah in full. Skirmishes is one thing, a major war is another thing. Turkey just might have a role to play in the aftermath of the war, in construction and in order keeping. I mean, who's going to be policing Gaza if there is going to be some kind of a setup whereby you can actually protect people from gangs, if nothing else? And there too, it may have to play second fiddle to Egypt. But what I see now, every interlocutor on the Arab side or the non-Israeli side is basically very weak, because the Israelis are not even listening to the Americans, if the Americans are really playing hardball with them, which I don't think they do. So this war may not end until the Israeli security state is satisfied with what they've got. But I really don't know what the point of satisfaction is going to be if the goal is to basically have the head of Yahya Sinwar, which still eludes them after 6 months of war.
And destroying Gaza in the process of this pursuit. You're absolutely right. Gallup, how does this fit in with public opinion in Turkey?
Well, I think, I mean, obviously, probably in line with public opinions in many, many countries, the public opinions are extremely pro-Palestine and extremely critical of Israel or anti-Israel. So the public opinion, as I just mentioned, one of the small Islamist party, the main item that it campaigned on against the government that won the more than 6% of the vote and become the third largest party in the country was Gaza, the war, the fact that the Turkey is not doing enough, Turkey is not cutting the trade links with Israel. So the public opinion there is very significant. And also, I think the public opinion in the region also, when you talk to people in the Middle East, there is the perception that Turkey should do more. But what does that more mean is debatable, because when you look at it, Turkey clearly adopted a policy that prioritized the Arab agency on these subjects. And it doesn't want to present a policy that will overshadow or compete with the Arab actors, with many of them it's just recently mending ties. So this is, I think, the policy probably still that it's going to stick to.
And just briefly, Turkey's relationship with Russia, it's very visible in Istanbul. Lots of Russians, lots of Russian money evident.
I think it's still strong, the trade links, the energy links, and it's still important, but it's also changing. Previously, this relationship included some dimension that was not part and parcel of Turkish-Russian relationship. If you look at it from historical perspective, that was Turkey and Russia engaged in defense industrial cooperation. That was the first time Turkey and Russia engaged in conflict management in their shared neighborhood in a very significant manner, in Syria, in Libya, in Nagorno-Karabakh, also partially, I would say, in Black Sea. That is also quite a novel thing. And also Turkey and Russia engaged in some very sensitive technological cooperation, such as the Russia building Turkey's nuclear power plant. I think the content of it, even though the Turkey will keep on to having good relation with Russia, because it thinks that the cost of breaking down would be very significant, the content is changing. So at this stage, I don't see that Turkey and Russia would engage in a defense industry cooperation going forward. I don't think, even though the Turkey and Russia will still engage with itself, with each other in the conflict management, that will be less pronounced. And finally, the improving climate in Turkish-Western relationship would have an impact on Turkish-Russian relationship. Because at the Turkish-Russian relationship, always the invisible third party is the West. The health and then the nature of the Turkish-Western relationship always has an impact on Turkish-Russian relationship. And the final point, if you look at the Black Sea, this is like real the center of the contest going forward. You have all six littoral states, seven littoral states, bearing Russia out. So you have three NATO members, Romania, Bulgaria, Turkey, two NATO aspirants, Ukraine and Georgia. You have two EU members, Bulgaria and Romania, and three EU aspirants or the candidate states. So the more Russia engages in domination attempt in Black Sea, the more the Black Sea is being integrated gradually into the Western ecosystem. And this is a policy that Turkey supports, and this is a policy I think that will create more friction in Turkish-Russian relationship going forward.
But I still think that, you know, like Turkey-Russia relations will continue and would not be completely abandoned. I mean, Galip knows it, and he has written extensively about it. So they are neighbors, and they are also, you know, little state of Black Sea. And Turkey is still very much dependent on Russia on energy. And what Turkey now trying to do is, of course, becoming the energy hub of the Russian oil exports, including to the EU. So, I mean, Ankara sees an opportunity, of course, to kind of direct the Russian energy towards the Europe, and it will keep the relations still intact. But like Galip said, in the defense cooperation, I think it also reached its limits because Turkey is kind of newly found its NATO, I mean, not newly, but found its NATO identity. And, you know, like think, I think it will still continue to be a balancing power in the Black Sea. And I think the US, the West and Russia got used to it, that Turkey is kind of the balancing power in the Black Sea.
So if we all asked Erdogan, who do you want to win? What do you think he would say?
I mean, probably a stalemated ceasefire would be the best solution. But if you have to choose one, I think they would prefer Ukraine winning without Russia falling apart. Because Russia falling apart may be as or more dangerous than, yes, aggressive Russia we're witnessing today.
Ukraine winning, Russia not losing. And that's the trouble.
With or without Russia.
On that note, we are going to have to stop. Tantalizing note. So a big thank you to my guests, Galip Dale, Soli Özel, Asla Aksoy. Do follow them all on X, and their details will be in the show notes. A reminder that you can find all of our podcasts on Apple, Spotify, and all major platforms, as well as through our social media. So do like, follow, subscribe, and leave us a review. And to read more from all our experts, or to find out more about the many events we've got coming this summer, don't forget to visit chathamhouse.org, where you can also find the work of our Middle East and North Africa program. Goodbye from me, Bronwyn Maddox. See you next week.